Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Being extremely sensitive to subtle energies and the emotions of others can present challenges. It can be overwhelming and cause you to lose yourself and doubt who you are. Affirming that being an empath may be a real thing and that you are not alone in your experience of the world, today's guest on Pathways offers practical exercises in her new book to help you understand, control, and fully manifest your gifts. Our guest is Reverend Stephanie Redfeather, author of the new book, The Evolutionary Empath, a practical guide for heart-centered consciousness. Stephanie's life journey, including achieving a degree in applied mathematics, becoming a respected Air Force officer, and over the past 14 years, throwing herself fully into experiential healing practices, has gifted her with a unique perspective, bridging both left and right hemispheres of the brain. Stephanie is the founder and director of Blue Star Temple, an ordained shamanic minister. She holds a bachelor's degree in applied mathematics and a master's and doctorate degrees in shamanic studies from Venus Rising University. She is also a Mesa carrier in the Pachacuti Mesa tradition of Peru, having studied with Don Oscar Miro Quesada and his lineage since 2005. She lives near Kansas City, Missouri. Hello, Stephanie, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
Hi, Paul. Thanks so much.
Well, I understand this is your first book, and I'm wondering what compelled you to have to write it.
Yeah. Well, what compelled me was my personal experience as an empath and not really having mentors or teachers to help guide me through the process and just, you know, all of my years of bumping into walls and stumbling in the dark and cussing at God and all of those things that come with being in that dark place. If you Google on Amazon the word empath, there's a lot of information out there now. So it's clear that this is an emerging topic, that people are ready for it. But when I started writing this book 3 years ago, there was very little. And so it felt important that people needed a context and tools for understanding that being an empath is a real thing.
And how do you know if you're an empath?
Well, it is not as a simple cosmopolitan survey where you just answer some questions and it's yes or no. When I sat down to write this book, my spirit guides gave me only one directive, and that was create a definition, because I really have not seen anybody out there get granular on what it actually means to be an empath. So I spend two chapters breaking it down and talking about these different aspects. So, you know, the everyday simple shorthand definition of being an empath is a highly sensitive person, but there's so much more than that. And a piece that's easy to extract and easy for people to identify with are what I've identified as the five distinct qualities of an empath. So if I may share those. So the first quality is our ability to merge with and absorb the energy of other beings. And that includes people, animals, you know, anything with sentience or consciousness. And this comes from our very open personal energy field. And so when we're unconscious of this aspect of ourselves, this is the quality that can cause us to take on other people's emotions and problems and cause us to struggle with boundaries. The second quality is our highly sensitive nervous system. And as nervous systems go, they're supposed to be sensitive, yes, but as empaths, it's like we got a 2-for-1 deal. So we're processing so much information that it makes us prone to overwhelm and overstimulation. And so for empaths, extra vigilant self-care is really important so that we can maintain our functionality in the world. The third quality is our great sensitivity to the energies around us and an ability to perceive or access subtle information that's stored in the energy field of all types of life forms. I believe that consciousness exists on multiple levels. There's a lot of subtle energetic communication happening all of the time, all around us. And so as empaths, it makes it easier for us to tune into, for example, people who can see apparitions or the dead, accessing the Akashic records, people who do animal communication, people who are mediums or psychics or just having wicked intuition. These are all accessing those subtle realms of energy. The fourth quality is the premium that we place on peace and harmony. And that's in our relationships, our environment, our energy field. Again, when we're unconscious of this quality, this can cause us to be people pleasers, to not stand up for ourselves, to be doormats, because we'll do anything and everything we can to maintain peace and harmony in our environment. And the fifth and final quality is our big open hearts and our desire to serve others. And so this makes us inclined towards careers focused on service. You know, a huge part of my tribe are energy healers and massage therapists and nurses and hospice workers and therapists. But, you know, I was in the Air Force for 10 years. So clearly there are empaths that are bankers and engineers and computer programmers and, you know, in all walks of life. And this quality, if we're not careful, can cause us to overgive and put ourselves last on the list and operate from having a very empty well because, you know, we're focusing on everybody else.
Now, you say in the book that people choose at a soul level to be an empath. Does this mean that they're born with it?
Well, in my belief system, when we're in spirit form, we're making some decisions about the major aspects of the incarnation we're about ready to come into. And so being, you know, the term evolutionary empath has a very specific meaning, a very particular vibration to it. In the bigger picture, humanity is in a cycle of ascension. We are raising in consciousness, raising in vibration. And I believe that as empaths, we come into the planet with a more refined set of sensitivities, a slightly different energetic physiology. And so with that being said, I also believe that really this is the natural human design, that we're born with these sensitivities, that this is a natural way for us to interact and communicate with the world, but based on the choices we made at a soul level, based on the influences of our family and the messages that we internalize from our culture and church and school, etc., and then just human free will, those pieces don't always turn on or stay activated. A lot of times, because of the messaging that we receive, we shut those parts of ourselves down because they're not accepted.
I see. So there's probably a lot more empaths than there are people who realize that they're empaths. Mm-hmm. And you make the point that we're at a historical moment in terms of the number of empaths. What tells you that there are more empaths incarnating today, these days?
Just my personal experience of being a teacher, of working with individual clients, of working in the subtle energetic realms, more and more and more people are showing up with these qualities, are talking about it, are coming to me and asking questions. And I coined the phrase the empathic Big Bang because, you know, in geologic time, 100 or 200 years is the blink of an eye. And so all of us who are incarnating now and who have been in the last century, we are the empathic Big Bang. We are the ones hacking the path through the jungle for the ones coming up behind us.
You know, I love this. There's so much content in this book, and it's a beautiful book. I really enjoyed reading it, and I know that I'm empathic to a large extent. I don't know whether I would be definable as an empath per se, but I got a lot of benefit out of it, and I really love the way that you break down certain concepts like the masculine and the feminine, the personal masculine, the archetypal masculine, and the divine masculine, as well as the personal feminine, archetypal feminine, et cetera. Is there a correlation? It seems like, well, you know, there was an empath on Star Trek, and it was a woman, you know, and so I think the natural tendency would be to visualize an empath as being a feminine being. Can you speak to that?
Yeah. So I will start with giving a few qualities of the archetypal masculine and feminine because we need a foundation for this part of the conversation. So in general, the masculine is associated with the left brain and the right side of the body. And so left brain qualities, masculine qualities tend to be the same set. So the masculine or the left brain is very logical, practical, linear, straightforward, action oriented, very much 3D touch feel type of energies. If you boil the masculine down to its essence, it's about action. It's about doingness. The feminine associated with the left side of the body and the right brain is more spatial as opposed to linear. It's more about compassion, intuition, creativity, receptivity. And so those qualities, if you boil down the feminine, are really about receiving the side or the, I don't mean passive in a negative way, but if you, you know, in contrast to the action oriented nature of the masculine. And so if you think about these qualities that I just shared of an empath, our sensitivities, our intuition, our ability to feel and use those qualities to navigate our life, the empath qualities pretty much peg the feminine side of the house. And so in a way, it's kind of a double whammy because we live still in a very patriarchal culture that values the masculine principle and thereby devalues the feminine principle or the feminine archetypes. And so as empaths, we show up with our big hearts and our sensitivities and our feeling nature. And so many people have not been welcomed with open arms.
Right. Right. So I really love the way that you that you are counseling towards balance between the inner masculine and the inner feminine, between how we need to develop both. And you have got a really cool understanding of that. And patriarchy is where it's become unbalanced. And so we need to cultivate the inner feminine for sure. But you also have a lot to say about how we need to cultivate the inner masculine too. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that, especially with regard to women?
Yeah, absolutely. So every quality has an unbalanced or extreme expression. And so, you know, the masculine qualities that I described, and I go into a lot more detail in the book, are not good or bad. They're necessary and important, just like the feminine. But when they get expressed to an extreme, the masculine tends to overexpress and the feminine tends to underexpress. And so the masculine out of balance becomes overbearing, domineering, competitive, you know, kind of like what we're seeing in the world right now. We are seeing the overexpression of the unhealthy masculine principle. And so the first part, because there's so much focus and emphasis on the divine feminine, which is important because we need to bring her in to balance the masculine. But it's not about vilifying the masculine or kicking him to the curb. And now, you know, we stand in the feminine going, yay, we have overcome. That's not balance either. And so the balance is really about the masculine and feminine walking in conscious equal partnership where they value each other, listen to each other, respect each other. And that starts for each one of us inside with our own personal expression of the masculine and feminine inside of us. And so, you know, the masculine energies, when they're in balance, they are here to hold space, to create safety, to witness without judgment, to create, you know, a friend of mine and I who do similar work, we talk about he's kind of the crunchy outer coating and the feminine is sort of the soft, gooey center, if you will, you know, so they both serve a different purpose that are equally valuable.
Right. And so in the patriarchal system, we've diminished the feminine, and I really like the way that you explain how patriarchal religions have contributed to that by, you know, positing a male god and glorifying the values of orthodoxy and rigidity as opposed to trusting the intuition. I thought that was a really interesting correlation that you made on how religion has affected people. And women, you know, in general, tend to be more religious, and yet they're under the sway of this patriarchal orthodoxy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's, you know, to me, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. You know, religion creates too much structures, too many shoulds and shouldn'ts, where I believe that those are creations of man, not creations of God, if you will. And so many ancient traditions and spiritual practices focus on sort of these ascetic practices, denial of the body, the upward movement of energy. So it's about transcendence. You know, we don't want to feel desire. We don't accept that we're angry. That's a lower base emotion. We should be more evolved than that. You know, so God is always kind of this detached, upward, you know, upward looking entity, if you will, and all of these practices focus on this upward direction and this focus of transcending the body. And it's very subtle, but what it does is it ignores or denies or puts less emphasis on the downward direction, the embodiment aspect, the human aspect, the mother, you know, Mother Earth, the feminine, being in the body, feeling the feelings. And so there's a lot of very subtle influences that still exist that perpetuate this split between masculine and feminine, heaven and earth, spirit and matter, however you want to define it.
You know, one of the ways I think that we see this patriarchal domination take or one of the ways we can view it is through the lens of the seven chakras. And you talk about the seven chakras in the book, and I thought it was brilliant. You know, the idea that the bottom three chakras, though, that's kind of the realm of the ego. At least this is the way that I see it. You know, you've got security, you've got pleasure, you've got power. And then you get to the fourth chakra, which is the heart chakra. And then you've got the three above that, which are the spiritual ones. And so it seems like the heart chakra is the pivot point. And that's what you're focusing on in the book when you talk about the consciousness of the heart.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and the heart being the center of the traditional chakra system, it's an alchemical place. It represents the center, the balance, the union of the above and below. And I also draw from Anadea Judith's work, who is an expert in the chakra system, and she talks about how humanity itself is moving from third chakra to fourth chakra consciousness. So heart-centered consciousness, moving out of the love of power into the power of love.
Oh, that's beautiful. It's very nicely put. You know, the very first chapter of your book is entitled, You Are Not Crazy. Talk about the unhealthy aspects of being an empath. What are the struggles?
Yes. And sadly, this is just the way it works. We have to slog through all of the muck first, you know, in the unconscious years of not being aware that we're an empath. And so we have these sensitivities, but we don't recognize it. And so many of us fall into codependence. We can't figure out where we end and the next person begins. And so we end up taking on other people's emotions and problems, and we think they're our own. And because we were born that way, we have no different frame of reference to even recognize that that's, you know, that other people don't do that. We tend to lose ourselves in relationship. We get overstimulated, overwhelmed. A lot of times we'll kind of shrink because we're so overstimulated by the world that it's difficult for us to engage like other people do. Oftentimes we suck at boundaries. We're like, boundaries, what? You know, we don't know how to say no. We don't know how to ask for what we need. And because it's so easy for us to blend and merge with others, it makes it challenging for us to know who we are, to stay in our center, to be grounded in our own sovereign space. And so for many of us, it's easier, it's more natural, if you will, to drop our anchor in another person and live our life from their perspective.
So your book posits that becoming aware of the fact that you are an empath is going to help with these things. In other words, instead of like accepting some label like codependent or personality disorder or, you know, some anxiety disorder, that if you realize that you're an empath, that can help you essentially cure that syndrome, that way the world might see you?
And I hesitate to use the word cure, but I know where you're going there. My belief is that any kind of transformation, you know, whether you're an alcoholic trying to get sober, whether you're an unconscious empath, whatever it is, awareness is like 80% of the battle. You cannot change a thing if you do not first acknowledge that it exists. And so when, you know, a lot of people don't like labels, and they can relate to this however they want, what's more important to me is to provide a context, to provide legitimacy, that this is a real thing. And if this helps you, then you can start to look at your life experiences through this lens and regain your power and understand that, oh my gosh, these things happened because I am so sensitive, or because I had no idea that I was taking on everybody else's problems, or, you know, couldn't even spell boundary, you know, and then it positions you to be able to make empowered, conscious choices.
You know, in the second half of your book, which we hardly have time to delve into in today's program, is focused on practical tools for empaths. And a couple of them that you point to are tending to your energy field and establishing boundaries, which you just mentioned. Can you speak to this tending of your energy field?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, for this to make sense or to be meaningful, it helps for a person to recognize that they are an energetic being, you know, that we have an energy field. And so becoming aware of and developing a relationship with your energetic container is very important, you know, figuring out where your boundaries are, envisioning it, whether it's a ball or a cocoon or an egg or whatever works. And then recognizing that you're responsible for everything that's inside your field, meaning you have the choice as to what you invite in or what you invite out. And so part of that practice is good daily energetic hygiene, just like brushing your teeth and taking a bath. You need to manage your energy field, to clear it, to release what isn't yours, so that you can hear yourself, so that you can identify what is yours and what is not yours. And one of the simplest ways that I do that every day is just using my breath, you know, consciously breathing in through my feet, breathing up earth energy. And when I exhale, you know, you can imagine angels brushing their wings or standing under a waterfall or whatever works for you, that whatever isn't yours, whatever energetic detritus there is, that you're exhaling it out and giving that dross to Mother Earth. And that is a very simple practice. And then I include a lot more in the book.
I just did that, and it feels really good, that breathing. There's so many techniques in your book, and there's so many helpful tips for people on how to take care of their energy field and how to establish boundaries. And I also love what you say about resistance versus surrendering, or as you prefer to call it, allowing.
Mm-hmm.
Speak to that.
Yes. For anybody who plays with astrology, I have four planets in Scorpio. So I have a strong will, and surrendering is challenging for me. And so I really had to do a lot of personal work to redefine my understanding of surrender. That surrender doesn't mean giving up. It doesn't mean that your will doesn't matter. You know, in shamanic terms, I talk about shamanic death or a psychic death or death and rebirth mysteries, where multiple times throughout our lives we are invited to die to our old self or die to an old pattern. And that requires a surrendering, a releasing of that. And I can tell you from experience, I have done that kicking and screaming, and I have done it with grace. And grace is a lot easier. on the point of resistance, one of the things I've learned, like sometimes when we're working with something and we're listening to our gut reaction to a thing, sometimes resistance can immediately feel like a no, like, oh, I have resistance, that should be a no. What resistance is an invitation to look at what just triggered you. So resistance doesn't necessarily mean an immediate no or yes. It means take a look at what's causing that trigger, that resistance, and maybe there's something to deepen into, and then your answer will become more clear.
You know, it kind of shows up in what you talk about is the power of the pause. Rather than resist or rather than cave, you know, it's okay, and it's really important for empaths when they're feeling under pressure to say, hey, let me sleep on it. You know, let me get back to you. The power of the pause, you call it. It's just one of the many, many techniques in your book. And, you know, we're basically running out of time, but I just want to say thank you very much for being on the show and for writing this book, Practical Guide for Heart-Centered Consciousness. It opened my heart. I really enjoyed reading it, and I really appreciate your work. There's so much more that we could explore, but we're pretty much out of time. But I would like to invite you to tell our listeners about your website and what's there.
Absolutely. My website is bluestartemple.org, and it is basically the virtual space within which I conduct my sacred work in the world. So working with clients, offering classes, I have video home study programs and meditations and workbooks and a variety of tools to support empaths on their spiritual journey.
Well, thank you very much. That's bluestartemple, all one word, .org for Stephanie's website. And for those who tuned into the Pathway Show late today, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of the book Intuitive Intelligence, which shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. In a second, I'll tell you how you can rewind and replay this interview whenever you like via the internet or as a free podcast. Today, we have been visiting with Reverend Stephanie Redfeather, author of The Evolutionary Empath, A Practical Guide for Heart-Centered Consciousness. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed via KBOO.fm on Sunday mornings at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. Podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are always available for free at divination.com, spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes and other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and Podcasts. And thanks again to Reverend Stephanie Redfeather and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.